This was a retreat, unlike any other, for me, anyway. I don't think I've ever been quite so ill for a retreat as this one. And that meant I didn't get to sit with you quite so much. Oh, Patrick. Good morning. And, so that was kind of unfortunate, but still it had the same feeling of enclosure and stillness and gratitude. So I was kind of surprised because I thought, you know, I was whining quietly to myself. It's like, oh, I don't get to be in the Zendo so much. But still, somehow you guys generated the same powerful vibes of, you know, Buddha way. So thank you for figuring out how to include me anyway. Or maybe you didn't figure it out, and so much the better. So that means that probably you all realize that there is something that you can always trust. And some might say that what you can always trust is Daigo or Great Awakening, which is the essay we've been reading by Dogen, talking about during this retreat. But I think I'd say it a little differently. I think I'd say that there is something you can always trust is Daigo. Naturally, if somebody says something like that, we may, you know, we may try to reach for it. We may try to check out the thing that we can always trust. Of course, this is a natural gesture that we make, but if we, you know, we're Zenists, we may realize that that's not necessary. We don't have to reach for anything. And that is a measure of how much trust we can have. A celebrated Zen figure named Miho was a Dharma brother of another celebrated Zen figure named Yangshan, and they were both disciples of the great Guishan Lingyo. And naturally, they liked to horse around Zen-wise with one another, so one day, Miho dispensed one of his students to go and ask Yangshan a question and to bring the answer back. So the monk went to Yangshan and asked, something like, can people of today depend upon enlightenment? And Yangshan sent back the answer, it's not that there's no enlightenment, but how can they avoid falling into the secondary? And Miho thought that was pretty good. Another way that's said is that the Chinese is translated, is the enlightenment of today genuine? Is today's enlightenment genuine? And for Buddhists, you know, this might be a significant question. Otherwise, perhaps we're just, you know, going through the motions. And Shakyamuni Buddha died a long, long time ago. And as they say, as Dogen says, Bodhidharma went back to India a long time ago. So one of our ancestors says, it's not that it's not genuine, but how to avoid falling into the secondary. The secondary, of course, is whatever is not really trustworthy. If you contemplate the universe and don't find anything that's not trustworthy, well, okay, that's all right. But you might find something, in which case, maybe that's secondary. Maybe that's a substitute for the real thing. And maybe that's an enlightenment of yesteryear. Maybe that's an enlightenment divorced from practice. One of the pleasures of retreat, if there are any, is that sometimes, you know, you can find that you are no longer walking the mind road, so to speak. And not because you sought not to, just kind of stopped doing it. Means you simply settled into the humdrum everydayness of this body mind. And it doesn't necessarily mean that there weren't thoughts. Thoughts are as natural as we know as breathing in and out. But you weren't depending on them for anything. And that this is where this ungraspable trust arises. And as we've been chanting at the noon hour, you may enjoy it freely, even though you don't exactly know what it is. You may also, you know, you may think, what I'm talking about is a lot of malarkey, and that's okay too. But I'm talking about the stuff that's dearest to my heart. And if there are any pleasures to be associated with the leaving home state, maybe there are a few, and looking after the well-being of a community, it's that sometimes you get to talk about what's dearest to your own heart. And people will put up with it, at least for a little while. Dogen, of course, is quite a bit more eloquent than I. Earlier in the retreat, I, with a questionable propriety, referred to Dogen as Great Master Yo-Yo, because, like the yo-yo, he can fly way out and then come back to the hand. So here, after telling this story about the dependability of the enlightenment of today and not falling into the secondary, he's returning to the palm of your hand. He says, the nowadays spoken of here is the right now of each of you. Even if you think of the past, present, and future millions of times, all time is this very moment right now. Where you are is nothing but this very moment. Furthermore, an eyeball is this moment, a nostril is this moment. So it doesn't get much more intimately trustworthy than that. And our intimate practice of sitting, or just this, returns to that place of trust over and over and over again until there's really no argument anymore. There may be the continuing energy of great doubt, and that's okay. But there's no argument. Nowadays spoken of is the snoring of the 12-pound dog. Even though our retreat vessel is about to open, Dogen suggests quietly investigate this question from now on. Do people nowadays depend upon enlightenment? That is enlightenment dependable today? Renew this question in your heart. Renew this question at the head top. And that's one of those Chinese expressions dear to East Asians. It's the flat top of the head here, which is, of course, critical in Tai Chi and other practices. So renew it here, and renew it here means whole yogic body-mind. This is how we study questions like this. We don't try to pick it apart with our thinking. That's just one facet of the gem of our study. These days, shave pate monks in Song China and San Francisco look in vain for enlightenment, saying that enlightenment is the true goal, though they don't seem to be illuminated by the light of Buddha ancestors. I think we must sadly admit that that is true. Because of laziness, they miss the opportunity of studying with true teachers. They might not be able to attain liberation even if they were to encounter the emergence of authentic Buddhas. Miho's question does not mean that there is no enlightenment, that there is enlightenment, or that enlightenment comes from somewhere else. This question asks whether or not people depend upon enlightenment. It is like saying, how are people nowadays enlightened? If you speak of achieving enlightenment, you may think that you don't actually have enlightenment. If you say enlightenment comes, you may wonder where it comes from. If you say enlightenment comes, you may wonder, if you say I have become enlightened, you may suppose that enlightenment has a beginning. Miho did not speak this way. When he spoke of enlightenment, he simply asked about depend upon enlightenment. That is, what do you trust? So if you're thinking that, maybe you don't trust anything, maybe it's time to drop that thought. Maybe that's just unnecessary baggage. I think that's what Dogen means by laziness. He doesn't mean, they weren't willing to get up early and sit, because they were. Those guys and gals who said that enlightenment is the true goal, I'm sure they got up very early, sat many hours. But there was another kind of laziness where their study was not thoroughgoing. They were content to put enlightenment out there and try to find it. And that isn't good enough. Or so I would say, anyway. Maybe it's just the tattered ghost of my migraine talking. Oh, sorry, toast. Did she have a bad early life?
Don't know.
We don't know. I suspect so. She does. If you have some question or comment. Yes.
Okay. Is compassion and loving kindness the underpinning of this dharma?
I wouldn't say the underpinning. It's the inseparable lifeblood. Did you think that was excluded somehow?
No, I didn't. But I didn't want to complicate the question by asking if compassion and loving kindness is the request of this dharma.
Yeah. If the kind of trust I'm talking about doesn't invite that kind of response from us, then something's a little off. If it doesn't free up our heart that way, something's a little off. And, well, there's more to look at there. Wisdom Zen tradition, it may not always be talked about as much as in other traditions, but that certainly doesn't mean it's not important. And in fact, this morning we did make a point of chanting the mythos of Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva. Please, sure.
We've spoken about or heard about enlightenment within illusion and illusion within enlightenment. And we've heard the question asked, what happens when a great enlightened one becomes deluded or has illusion? And in considering all these things, I wonder if we express these things these ways as a way of extending a kind of compassion or fairness, because we can never really fully understand another person's experience of reality. We can never really fully think, are they enlightened or not? Maybe the fellows back at Starbucks I'm referencing. So do we talk about these things in this way so that we are all inclusive and compassionate? Or am I adding some icing to this that's unnecessary?
Well, not necessarily. I think what you bring up is one aspect and an important one. It's partly brought up to talk about such things as you mentioned, and also to help us not get stuck in the tar pit of Buddha's over there, sentient beings over there, which is another way of talking about what you mentioned. Because once we do that, the universe can never be stitched up again once you do that. The rift between Buddhas and sentient beings is a permanent one from that point of view. So, as an antidote to the coldness that can come from such a viewpoint, particularly if one has put oneself on the other side of that rift, namely among the great enlightened ones, we have Lin Ji's reminder that were you to travel the length and breadth of China, you could hardly find someone who's not enlightened, which is, among other things, a call to compassion, as well as an invitation to wisdom. And with those two wings, we are taught, the bird flies steadily. Does that address?
It does.
Yeah. Do you want to complicate it some more?
Tomorrow.
Okay. Okay. Jim, did you have a question?
Yes, Miel. I wondered if you might comment about the difference between trust and faith.
Ah, well, this morning, not so much. That is, I don't think there's so much difference. They both have they both feel like the body, the skin, flesh, bones, marrow, which is why they use that, Dogen uses that, and others use that phrase so much. It's like you almost can't get away from it to look at it. It's so intimate. It's our very body. So trust, faith, can depend on, all of that is so close that it's very, that you can't see it. That's why we tend to talk about almost it being something you, oh, someone spoke of as though a window behind us were open and the sun were shining on us, but we can't see it. We can't turn and look at it, but you know it's there. It's more like that. Now, some people insist that you should turn and see it. And sometimes the response to that is, well, that's not very good faith if you insist that you have to turn and see it. How about if you actually you know it's there? Just like you know your bones are there. Like that. Sorry, toast.
This is more of an observation because I think we had a metaphor on this retreat, and that is I was pondering the parable as you've instructed day and night and wandering back and forth to my sleeping abode, and so there was a beautiful full moon. And then yesterday morning I was walking back and there was a dark moon. It was a lunar eclipse.
You saw it.
And because we're in Sashin and I'm not listening to NPR, mm-hmm. I looked at this dark body with the thin light and I thought, is that me? Am I not seeing the moon? I know it's full. And there was just a very lovely moment about the teaching of Dogen right there.
Yeah, amazing.
Anybody else see? It was back in full force last night.
Yeah. Anybody else see the lunar eclipse?
On the way over here.
You did, wow. Congratulations.
And I heard that on NPR.
You did?
you were here.
Yeah. So,
because that seems to me that it's the paradox of Dogen's instruction. Is it the asker or the universe? You know.
Mm-hmm.
It was a beautiful sashin. We missed you, but nonetheless, we knew you were there.
Well, I wasn't far away. And it was a great joy to me to know that it was still happening, even though I was horizontal some of the time.
Spoke about thoughts as being one of the possible untrustworthy things. Sometimes untrustworthy things.
Sometimes.
That we can't depend upon. Yesterday, for some reason, I was thinking about a bumper sticker I'd seen one time that says, "Don't believe everything you think." Mm-hmm. And I thought, wow, that is really good advice. It's like, mm-hmm. it's not don't believe nothing that you think. Don't believe everything you think. It's just kind of right there in the middle. Mm-hmm. And it just very succinctly mm-hmm. kind of brought that up.
Yeah.
That whole relationship to thoughts and so on to
right. mind. So our you know, ancestors pointed out there is such a thing as the mind road, and it's okay to walk on it. But it's also good to realize that's not the only option. We're not restricted to that. We can use that when we like. And that the universe is also much broader than that. And then when it comes to what is most deeply trustworthy, thoughts may not enter into it, or they might. Yes.
I'm thinking that thoughts wouldn't be excluded from it, because mm-hmm. otherwise you'd have an awfully hard time being aware of it even vaguely. Now I'm thinking of the Enmejuku Kanangyo that we chant on Thursday morning. Mm-hmm. Right, and it has that wonderful
Nenenju Shinki.
Nenenfu Shin, which is which I suppose from the echo is life sustaining.
Yes. Thought after thought arises in mind, thought after thought not separate from mind. Yeah, this is life, definitely life affirming. This is the activity of life, just as breathing is, just as blood pumping, just as tears flowing, just as sneezes. All of that is life affirming. And thoughts are no different, but the fabric they weave is useful, but does not wrap the whole universe. And it's good to know that. So we could sit a little more and then have our Bodhi Day ceremony and then eat some more. And I would say that will be several days well spent. Yes?
Brief keening before sitting?
Let's see. So why don't we say till a quarter after? Oh, wait, we have to do a little, what do we have to do? The ceremony, we're pretty much set up, right?
Pretty much.
We want to put the white kata around the Shakyamuni mm-hmm. statue there. And then we have a little explanation to do about the ceremony. So make it maybe 10 after then. We'll end Kinhin at 10 after.
Okay.
And then we'll want to do our ceremony at quarter till. Thank you very much.
May our intention be great.